Good idea that Governor Hochul is beginning to, raise the issue. Well, maybe we should be using a little bit more nuclear power to help meet us.
Hold the singing, just the hand claps.
Singing was good.
I like the singing.
Hi, I'm Laura from Hudson at the Hudson Farmers Market. You're listening to WGXC Acra 90.7 FM Hands-On Radio.
Tickets are now available at wavefarm.org/drive-in for an unforgettable drive-in event with Negative Land and Sue C., Matt Most, and Rodney Allen Greenblatt opening. Turn out for Negative Land's legendary sound collage and real-time cinema with Sue C., along with Matmo's renowned electronic music and sampling culture. This and so much more at the Greenville Drive-In, Friday, May 31st. All to support Wave Farm and WGXE. Tickets are going fast. Get yours now. Drive-In is all one word at wavefarm.org/drive-in.
WGXE underwriting support is provided in part by Upstate Films, where membership provides access to world-class cinema, first-run feature films, art house films, live music, and more, plus advance notice of close-up series conversations with directors and actors and other special events at the Star Theater in Rhinebeck, the Orpheum in Saugerties, and traveling around the Hudson Valley. Information at upstatefilms.org. That's upstatefilms.org.
Wave Farm's WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Pat in Catskill, New York. WGXC monthly supporters care deeply about Creative Community Radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
From Slavery to Freedom.
Hello, this is Kimberly Irwin, and it's so wonderful to offer a great conversationalist today on Race Talks.
Thank you, Kimberly. I really appreciate this invitation to participate.
So, Jacqueline Chalice, will you please share with the audience who you are and what brings you to Race Talk?
Oh, hi, Kimberly. Thanks for having me. I'm Jacqueline Schallis, the excitable introvert, and I help introverted women of color in business to really embrace their awesome so that they get seen, heard, and respected.
Okay, take a look at this video. I'm not going to say anything. I just want your response. Okay? Here we go. Well, when I say funny, I don't really mean that it's hilarious. I mean that it's...
So I'm learning, I'm growing, I'm committed to social justice and social change, which is why I'm really thrilled about the invitation to participate, Kimberly. I appreciate it.
And your thorough background is one of the reasons that I'm so glad you agreed and accepted the invitation. Share with us the first moment that you recognized ethnicity exists in America.
I was coming home from my godmother's house, Nene Jacqueline, and I saw a student who I had walked about two blocks, and I saw Greg. And as I passed by Greg's house, he let his dog loose, and his dog chased me all the way home. At that moment in time, I'm not sure how I knew, but I intuitively knew it's because I was Black. I knew that. That made me know that I was Black.
When people think of themselves as a race or even as an ethnicity, even as a nationality, I have friends who say, I'm 100% Irish. I'm like, no, you're not.
Okay, Tabitha. So that was the new game. It was to show you that picture, and I want your first thought.
Powerful. When I see it, I get goosebumps just looking at those women.
Now, I love it because they're like stepping.
Yes, tapping, yeah.
They have some place to go, some place to be.
Yes, they do. to the polls.
Exactly, to the polls.
Why do I feel comfortable being on this show? Because A, I'm comfortable with Kim as a host and talking about anything, but B, I'm in an interracial marriage. I'm married to an Asian woman.
Prior to that, it had never crossed my mind that I wanted to be a judge. I mean, it never crossed my mind. I enjoyed what I was doing. I love the law. I do have that passion for the law and practicing and arguing and getting before a jury and waving your arms and raising your voice and all that good stuff. But when the idea was planted, I thought, okay. And it almost brought me to tears because like she was the only one who actually saw me. And everybody else was scared to see me.
Saw the hood.
They saw the hood and saw the dark skin. And they made that association like, oh, this is somebody who's bad. I don't want to mess with him. Thanks for having me. I appreciate
it. Thanks for being here. And you're welcome to come back. And I so hope you do. So I'm going to ask my audience to stay tuned. And as I like to end, with love, beauty, and joy. Well, that is absolutely wonderfully said. So I'm just going to end it with that.
Okay, so that was End It with Love, Beauty, Joy, and so that's how I will start. Good evening. Thank you for joining. I am Kimberly Y. Irwin, Master Intercultural Communicator, who you can reach via my website, www.kimberlyirwin.me, anytime and here as your host of Race Talks on WGXC 90.7 FM, awayfarm.org Enterprise. Here, where every third Tuesday of the month from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m., we have the very necessary conversation on race and ethnicity. And why talk about race? Some continue to ask. My answer is always simple: to combat racism. Education is key and discussion a must. And now, let's get talking, because
no topic is taboo.
Right there it is. Garrett Roche is right there saying that for us. He's the host of the podcast, The Roche Solid Truth. And he has so graciously joined me here in the Catskills studio for the very first time. Here in the Catskills studios, we have just figured out how to learn to work the mics and utilize all of the great bells and whistles here. So we're going to have a great show today. Our guests are already here. And because you heard the opening was Race Talks the Show. And that is what we're going to be doing in June, streaming live. So you are being able to then see a visual, all of us, where today, unfortunately, you can't see the beauty of my two guests who are not here in the studio, but certainly available to talk to us today. Those people are Kathleen Tan, our special guest talker is Michael Sesserman, and we have Brenda Schufeld, who is a bit in absentia, but that's okay. She's got me working for her, and I'm going to share what she would like to set forth for you today. But like I said, this is a wonderful time of the year, May. And in our show today, we're going to showcase May as being a cultural awareness month for two cultures, actually. So last year, if you were listening to my show about this time, we only talked about the Asian American Pacific Islander Heritage Month. But I was just schooled because I was told there was a Jewish American Heritage Month too, and it was May. So this is the first time I'm actually going to share a little bit identification on that. And if we have time, you might hear from some very special people you might know in America. We do have a little bit of a video or a voice, an audio of the President of the United States and the Vice President and the, what do you call the Vice President's husband? Anybody? Can we get them on air here? Oh, well, since I didn't really introduce them, I think they're not interested in speaking right now. So let me just get into the first husband, right? Is that what you call him? The first husband? I see our guest, Dr.
Yes, that's correct. That rings a bell, Kimberly.
Okay, great. So. Kathleen Tan, she's like, yes, shaking her head up and down. So, yay, I just want to make sure I'm right. And I want to make sure we can speak to her or hear her immediately after I introduce her. Are we ready for our auxiliary speakers?
Positively.
Awesome. Okay. So then let's get started. Asian American cultural heritage, like I say, is this month. And we have our special guest who is a journey woman who is from the native, native of Philippines, I should say. Her journey is from there to here, where she founded the beloved coconut water brand. And I want to make sure I say this right, but if I don't, please, Kathleen, help me out. Lipa Fresh coconut juice, showcasing the richness of Filipino culture. And she is also a business manager, head of finance at Nevins Consulting. She has a bachelor's degree in business management, a master's in child and family psychology from Ateneo de Manila University, and while pursuing an executive women in leadership certification from Cornell University, she finds time to give back to us in her hometown of Hudson. And since I'm sitting in Catskill, I should say the region. And she's going to share why this theme for our month today, our month tonight, is cultural connections, because this is a way we can all connect by attending events, by speaking to one another across different cultural backgrounds, and really just feeling a little bit uncomfortable so that you can be comfortable. You know, sometimes, like they say, the diamond in the rough, you have to go through the fire before you can be the diamond. You have to get a little bit uncomfortable before you have that aha moment, moment with people. And so we're going to have a few aha moments with both of our guests who are here, and again, with our guest who is in absentia. So we are not going to have any more adieus, you know, like without further ado. So no more adieus. We're going to get started with Kathleen. I said a few things about her already, and I'm just going to leave the rest alone so she can share with us a little bit about herself and why she finds herself today or tonight on Race Talks. Welcome, Kathleen Tan. How are you?
Hi, good evening, everyone. Happy May. And hi, Kimberly. Hi, Garrett. It's nice to be here. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. Thank you for coming. You know, it was a pleasure to meet you. And the moment you said you'd be a guest talker, I was ecstatic. And so I just can't wait. Share as much as you'd like. And of course, I'll have questions later.
Okay. Well, so I've been in this country for 16 years. When I first moved here, it was actually a bad time. It was 2008, which I didn't even realize that it was bad timing. My son knew better than I did. He was 14 at the time, but he was in the Philippines. I have a sister here. She's been here like for 40 years. So I've actually been coming to New York very often. Like every year would come, visit my sister, stay with her for a few months, and then go back home. So New York is not really foreign to me. But growing up, of course, in the Philippines, I was actually already 44 when I moved here. So it's like I've lived in the Philippines 44 years. And coming here, it's still a bit of a culture shock, especially when I decided to move here and live here. There were a lot of things that I had to, I guess, relearn, because the culture is really so much different. Being in the Philippines, working there, being an entrepreneur myself, the way we do things is so much different from the way people do things here, the way they conduct business, the way they communicate. There's so many different things, and I really, really learned a lot. And speaking of, you know, getting out of your comfort zone, it was really a big getting out of my comfort zone. And I had to kind of turn everything around and do things much differently than how I was used to back in my country. But I've been so happy, like happy in the sense that I'm finding more purpose, you know, coming here, being here, making friends. And then, of course, you know, because of the pandemic, we moved here to Hudson full time. We had the house back in 2017, and we love coming to Hudson and Catskill. It's every weekend is like a vacation for us, right? Like take time away and be with nature. But then the pandemic gave us the opportunity to live here full time because now we can work remotely from home. And that was when I started, you know, becoming more active, working with the community. So 2017, I actually joined the Lighthouse as a board member. But then I wasn't active because I was only here on the weekend. So sometimes I would join, I would volunteer for the Lighthouse tours on the weekend. But then when we decided to move here full time, that's when I became even more active. And, you know, now I'm in charge of events and I'm sometimes even applying for grants, you know, things that are very, I guess, crucial for a nonprofit. At the same time, I also am part of Hudson Daycare, but unfortunately Hudson Daycare is right now is not operating. But I'm still a board member for Hudson Daycare.
Well, I know you sound like you've definitely been put to work because you're volunteering from not just one, but two organizations. And from what I remember you saying, you're still not letting it go, that Hudson Daycare idea, you know, that you're really still fighting for that. And so right. If there's anybody listening, let us know if you'd like to be a part of that success story, because that's what I feel like it's going to be, success story. And I think I shared with you before when we had the very long conversation one-on-one that I'm a product of the Hudson Daycare Center.
Yeah, which was amazing. You know, it's such a small world. We still, you know, it's very hard, it's tough, and childcare is such a necessity everywhere, you know, in our community. Everyone's still not able to go to work because they are in need of childcare.
And it's in those formative years when you're a child where if you are able to learn language, you can grow up learning foreign languages without having an accent when speaking a foreign language. So there's so many things that can be given to a young person if they're in that type of facility. Right. So they can be totally engaged, culturally engaged, because they're not with their family at home. They're with people from the community, and Hudson and Catskill in the area is rich with community and culture from every, right. I think from everywhere. Growing up, it was like, okay, three places. But now, I mean, yes, South America, you know, places in Asia and North America, because people are always like, oh, I didn't know Mexico is North America. So yeah, even in, you know, other places in other countries in North America. Let me ask you a question about your youth. And of course, any question that you don't want to answer, you just, you know, like roll your eyes or shake your head or something like that. But I kind of know you. You mentioned your son coming, being younger when he was here. What, if any, advantages do you think he has by having both cultures in his wheelhouse before, you know, he became an adult?
I mean, I would say it's like language. If you know many languages, right, you can speak five languages like other countries, you know, you do have a lot of advantage, right? Same thing with being in different cultures. You know, back then, you know, when my son was very young, he's very black and white. Like it's either this or that. No middle ground. And so him being exposed now as he's growing up to different cultures, different people, different ways of doing things, different beliefs and values, he got to see that, oh, you know what? It's okay. You know, like if this guy does this, or, I mean, let me give a very specific example. Let's say marijuana, right?
Okay, I think some people like that idea of you saying marijuana.
Am I allowed?
Yes, no. Hey, it's legal.
It's legal now in New York, right? No, but when he was young, his mindset is, oh, somebody who smokes marijuana is a bad person. End of story, right? And so being exposed to different people, especially when he worked in camp, he worked as an adult,
camp counselor? Okay.
Camp counselor, yeah. Okay. Sorry, I'm losing my words. But anyway, yeah, when he worked as a camp counselor, he worked with so many different adult counselors. And then he realized, you know, some smoke cigarettes, some drink, some this. And so, and then he gets to know them and he's like, wow, they're such cool people. So it doesn't necessarily mean just because you smoked a cigarette, you're a bad person, you know, or it's a bad, you're doing a bad thing. So being exposed to different people and very nice, friendly, great, empathetic, sympathetic kind of people, you know, you can't judge, right? It's that's the thing, you know, you can't really judge a person until you really get to know the person.
You make me think about the time that I was living in Germany, and there were a lot of people who were do the hookahs. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
And I was just, and they look really strange. You have all these people smoking at the same thing. I was just like, that's not sanitary. You know, I had my ideas about it, right? And so the longer I was there, the more I've seen it. You know, I had friends come and visit, and they were like, oh, let's go do that. And so, you're right. It just opens up your mind. But yeah, it can be a little uncomfortable. And even with me, you know, I'm the intercultural communicator. So I'm supposed to be open and, you know, accepting of everything, and actually not just accepting, but celebrating difference. And it's been hard for me, but I've grown up. And I think we also have to give people that opportunity to have that journey. Because some people's journey starts younger, like your son, and some quite older. I mean, so we have to allow for people to have their own time period and time frame to be more culturally adept. So thank you for sharing that personal part about your life. I know you're here also. Well, did you say his name, address, date of birth?
And he lives
Social Security number? Don't you dare.
No, he lives in Catskill, by the way.
Oh, okay. Well, hopefully he's listening, though, to his mama. Well, also, you're here to share, I like to say, best practices. So one of the best practices, obviously, in cultural connection is to go out and experience other things. And this event that you're helping to plan is a big deal in our area. Can you explain a little bit about what your role is and what we are going to experience if we go out in June? I mean, I already want to be on one of those boats, but you go ahead, explain it first.
No, so, you know, speaking of culture, heritage, and history, you know, we have really rich history here in Hudson Valley. Both Columbia County and Greene County, and one of them is the lighthouse. I mean, we had, you know, right now we have 7 lighthouses along the Hudson River, and we have our own lighthouse, which we are very fortunate, in the middle of the Hudson River, and it's called the Hudson Adams Lighthouse, and it's 150 years old this year.
Woohoo!
So we're celebrating the 150th anniversary of the Hudson Adams Lighthouse. And part of the goal of the organization, which is the Preservation Society, is to bring the lighthouse to the community. You know, because I've been, because of my role as the chair of the 150th committee, lighthouse committee, I've been talking to so many people, and I've met, you know, people everywhere, from every town, for all walks of life. And I'm always very shocked that 9 times out of 10, I meet a person who's never been to the lighthouse. And I feel, you know, that's very shocking to me because they've lived all their life and they've never seen the lighthouse. So anyway, so our goal is to bring the lighthouse to the community. You know, it's open right now this summer for tours. So there are tours every other Saturday, which you can go online and check. But we are kicking off the 150th celebration with the boat parade on June 1st. And this is involving all the communities. We have Athens side, the boat launch. So it's a boat parade participated by the U.S. Coast Guard, the Naval Militia, and all the boating community. It'll start in Athens, go down to Catskill, go around Dutchman's Landing, and then go back up to Hudson. And then we'll have festivities at the Hudson Riverfront Park. But people can certainly go to Athens Boat Launch, watch from there, Catskill, Dutchman's Landing, they can watch from there, or even on the Rip Van Winkle Bridge when some people, right? I went there and I was looking, this is kind of like the best view, because from an aerial view, you see all the boats coming back up from Catskill, and then it's going to end in Hudson. And so it's like the whole community, and we'll have music, food, festivities at the Hudson Riverfront Park. I invite everyone. It's good. It's for the family, for kids. Everyone is invited.
Well, I'm going to be there. And again, how do I get in one of those boats? Especially if it's good weather. I would like that.
And I have another surprise. Well, should I say it? But, you know, Greene County Tourism invited Miss New York, Miss Amelia Collins, and she's coming to the lighthouse. She's doing a tour of the lighthouse, and she's also going to the boat parade. She'll be on the first boat, which is the U.S. Coast Guard boat. And hopefully with her presence and her influence, she can share it with people, you know, and see how beautiful Hudson Valley is, right? And how beautiful our part of this part of New York is.
Oh, well, okay. If there's going to be only one amazing, famous person, I guess it has to be Miss New York then. Well, thank you so much. Kathleen, could I ask that you stay put and join us later for the round table, where, you know, we can converse more about whatever we've talked about, and you can mention, you can just give a shout out for whatever you wanted to say, but you didn't quite manage to say it in these few minutes. How about that?
Thank you.
Wonderful. And I want to get to our next segment. I mentioned Jewish American Heritage Month. I wanted to share with you what I don't know. So the month of May was chosen due to the highly successful celebration of the 350th anniversary of American Jewish history. And it was organized by the Commission for Commemorating 350 Years of American Jewish History. So people have asked me, and sometimes sullenly stated, why are we celebrating Heritage Month? I mean, come on. And then, of course, with even Black History Month being in February, people were like, isn't it every day we need to celebrate and every month? And my answer always is, it's not, obviously, it's always good to celebrate. So whether we pick a month of actual recognition or not, the idea is to celebrate culture. And if we now in 2024 feel the need to be like, oh, we shouldn't really just separate one month. Again, that's a group of us. I don't think it's ever a problem to celebrate or to mention or to highlight. It's not like we say, you know, should we stop, you know, commemorating those who are heroes who go out into war? You know, we've done that before. You know, shouldn't we do it to them every day? Yes, we should do it every day, and then we have special occasions for it. More times to rejoice, more times to get on that boat. I'm going to keep going onto that boat. So I don't really mind myself. And if you do, I guess you can write a letter, because it's from our government. And right now, I would share what President Joe Biden would say about this. But I'm thinking, I don't know if we're going to have enough time. So if we do, we have it before roundtable to listen to and maybe to get what our government wants to share about this time to commemorate Jewish American Heritage Month. And it's the second gentleman. President Biden and the second gentleman attend a Jewish American Heritage Month celebration. That's what we have on YouTube. And again, if we don't get to it, I'll let you know exactly how to find it, because, of course, it's our government and we need to be supportive of all the cultures when we seek to bring forth the announcements to the entirety of America citizenry. Okay, so there's another guest. He's a special guest speaker. His name is Michael Sesserman. And I didn't share too much about Michael in advance because he's here live, unlike Brenda. No, I love you, Brenda Schubel. He's a special guest who's the Associate Director, State Partnerships for the American Cancer Society. And he has brought information to me that I thought would be excellent to highlight, because it's about helping a group of people with an illness that is, I don't think it's the first. I think maybe heart attack is probably the first illness that, you know, creates havoc in the culture of men and women. But he's here to share with us specifically on how a population, a culture in America can show support for research in the area of cancer. So I'm going to have Michael Sesserman come on right now. And Michael, just like Kathleen, you know, she was your template. If you could share a little bit about yourself that you would like to let our audience of listeners know. And then, of course, share with us what you're doing today to help connect cultures.
Okay, I'll do my best.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me on. I've been with the American Cancer Society for about 24 years now, and my job is very important to me. My father died of cancer when I was young. I've actually had a couple bouts of cancer myself, and of course, we all know people who have, suffered with the disease. You know, I love my job and love to, you know, feel like I'm making an impact. And, you know, with the American Cancer Society, I believe we're the oldest cancer fighting organization in the country, starting about 110 years ago. And so it feels good to be a part of that. I live in Philmont. I actually lived in Athens before that, and I must say I've never been to the lighthouse, so you know, I took notes on, you know, when that celebration is happening, so I'll be trying to get out there. So I've always wanted to actually do that, but I'm here today to talk about a really exciting study, and just to kind of give some background. With the mission of the American Cancer Society, our mission is to improve the lives of people with cancer and their families through advocacy, research, and patient support to ensure that everyone has an opportunity to prevent, detect, treat, and survive cancer. So, we do that in a few different ways. One being research, and we are the largest funder, private nonprofit funder of cancer research in the country. We also do that through advocacy, and we advocate at the federal level, at the state level, and then we do it with the kind of work that I do at the state and local level, promoting prevention. And one of the ways we do that is we use the research to help us understand what we need to focus on. So for example, how do we know that, you know, we were talking about smoking and everything, and it's like, oh, it's not bad. It's just what people do. Well, actually, in this case, it is actually bad in that we know it's the number one preventable cause of death and disease. And we know from the research, like I'm going to talk about, you know, it was proved, and we know there was the Surgeon General's report in 1964 saying, you know, lung cancer is caused by tobacco use. Well, that was because of one of the first long-term population studies that the American Cancer Society did in the 1950s. And so we've done a number of these cancer prevention studies through the years, the last one being the Cancer Prevention Study 3, and that started in 2006. And my wife and I are actually a part of that study. Again, just another way we can fight cancer by just being a part of these studies so we can learn more about what to do. And so now we know that smoking causes not just lung cancer, but actually 12 other types of cancers. And so that comes through these long-term population studies where we follow healthy people for decades and see, you know, what they've been exposed to, what their behaviors are, and things like that. And then if they get cancer, we can look back and look for patterns over a large, very large number of people. And so they're very powerful studies. And so I'm very excited to announce that we've just launched a new population cohort study called the Voices of Black Women Study.
Woo-hoo-hoo!
And what's amazing about this is it is the largest ever long-term population study of Black women ever. And so it will help us really understand all the various factors that contribute to the disparities that we see in Black women. And so for example, it's really disturbing to know that, I want to make sure I get this statistic right. So, forgive me.
Well, while you're looking for that, I want to say, I might challenge you on something during the roundtable, so I want you to definitely get your facts and figures straight.
Okay, that's fair.
Okay. Did you find it yet?
Yeah.
Okay.
So black women are 41% more likely to die from breast cancer than white women. And that statistic is even more striking because fewer black women are diagnosed with breast cancer than white women.
Mm.
And that's just one example. We know for most types of cancer, black people have the highest death rate and shortest survival of any racial and ethnic group in the U.S. So this study is designed to help address that. And that's how we, you know, incorporate our, you know, health equity efforts into it's one way we do that is through these studies.
Well, I'm so glad you mentioned that, Michael, because I'm actually still part of a study. It's a Black Women's Health Study that came out of Boston College, I believe, Boston University. And I'm just going to read a little bit about that because I think it's really important that we talk about different communities when we talk about health and illnesses, because we know that since, you know, we have DNA, that a lot of the illnesses follow in the scientific biological realm, right? So it's not what you look like or even what part of the world you live in, but, you know, what's traveling literally through your blood, your genes. So this study was a study of 59,000 self-identified Black African-American women from across the U.S. And I always tell my friends, you always sometimes wonder, who are they asking? They're not asking me. So when they asked me, I was thrilled. I said, yes, sign me up. So it started in 1995, and I'm still a part. In fact, just a couple of weeks ago, I filled out another questionnaire. And it wasn't supposed to be that long. You know, I think they said it was supposed to be 10 years, but they kept getting funding. So when I hear about, you know, what you, that's why I so wanted you here, because when I hear about this study, my mother had breast cancer. And every year I go to the doctor. They want to, you know, make sure I do my breast exams and I'm checking, because, of course, it runs in families, and specifically, you know, with gender, right? So if my mother had it, my aunts have it, and then, you know, maybe I will have it, my sister will have it. So thank you so much for your efforts and the efforts of your organization. And I think you have something that you want me to do, right? If not the listeners, you certainly want me to do it. So what is your ask, Michael? Yes,
I do. Well, let me tell people what the eligibility is so they understand. So we are looking to recruit 100,000 Black women across the country. We're really focused on 20 states and the District of Columbia. And we're looking for Black women between the ages of 25 and 55 who have not had cancer in the past, other than a skin cancer like basal or squamous cell carcinoma. So those are okay. But if you're a Black woman between those ages of 25 and 55 who identify as a Black woman, we would love for you to participate in this study. And I suspect, Kimberly, that you may be in that range. And
barely, I'm making it.
and so, you know, I want to take this opportunity to ask you if you would be willing to sign up to this very important study.
Absolutely. And I will start the moment I become Brenda Schufelt, after I become Brenda Schufelt. Okay, so you will share with me the link and all that information, and I will put it on right after our last segment. How's that?
Okay, that's fair enough.
Awesome. Thank you.
Can I tell people what the website is?
Not right now. Okay. We're holding out. So if you're listening and you want to have this information, you have to grab a pen, get ready, or it's always going to be available on my website. So now for our third segment, it's about what you can do to be involved in your community to, of course, be culturally adept, right? So if you are a person who has an older family member in your neck of the woods, and you, or, you know, I guess with technology, you can Zoom, WhatsApp, Facebook, you can TikTok them, however else you want to communicate with an older person, because these people are ripe for information, right? And they are people who have walked the walk. So they're not someone you need, I mean, they're not something you have to read in a book. They're really telling you their experiences. And we have a Hudson Area Library who has been, which has been very fruitful at providing voices from the past. So I'm going to read verbatim what Brenda would say if she were here. Brenda Schufelt is the Hudson Area Library's Hudson History Rooms Coordinator. And before she was that, she was the program director of the Hudson Area Library. While I was the board member, I was actually the program committee chair, and I really worked for her. And she would provide these notes that I would have to read during our meetings, monthly meetings. And so it just feels like home that I would do this for her. So Brenda, when you hear this, shout out to you. Thank you so much for sharing, and I hope I do you justice. So she wanted to make sure we give thanks and to the Black Legacy Association of Columbia County, BLACC, which was formed in the late 1980s under the umbrella of the Columbia County RSVP, Retired Senior Volunteer Program, through Columbia Opportunities, Inc. This collection was donated to the library by Columbia Opportunities in 2018, and through an Institute for Museum and Library Services grant, was digitized, and the oral histories are now on the website. And I mean, there are many of them. They really went to work on that. So the RSVP's mission was to create the most broad-based research program to reveal a hidden legacy of Columbia County history, the contributions made by the community. In this case, it's the Black community, and they're having another oral history project, which is the LGBTQ community, and they're seeking after that more grants to forward the communities of other cultures. So this is like fabulous. Anyway, I'm just going to continue with the part by the research files are quite extensive, and the exhibition currently is called A Dialogue Across Generations, Making Connections Through the BLACC Collection, partially funded by NY Humanities, a grant, and it continues to be a mission that is satisfied by like-minded individuals. And this one was curated by our own Tanya Jackson. And Tanya is heading and steamrolling, maybe is a better way of saying it, Juneteenth. So she and many organizations are getting together in June. So right after you're on the boat, or you're visualizing the boat, looking at the boat from the boat launch or the bridge, you may stay put or come back for June 19th with its Juneteenth event. And she has events throughout June, just like the 150th anniversary. So June is jam-packed in this area. And each wall in the library right now, where you go in to the doors, the first right side of the building inside, there's the team that put together all these posters. They're anchored to the wall. And you'll see Ed Cross's oral history as he speaks a lot about his employment, including the brickyards. And there are us very many other laborers that were traveling from down south up to the Hudson River to the brickyards. And again, those are real people making that northern migration, which you only tend to hear about in the books if you're lucky and you're in the north. Okay, I don't want to get political, but we know it's important that our heritage is made available to everyone, because we are all connected. We are all a part of the human race. And so anybody's history is everybody's history. And so none of it should be lost, and everything should be shared in school or on your own, through your libraries, through your oral histories within your family. So definitely talk to each other. And she also shared with us a brief oral history that I would love to share, but I am going to do that after I allow you both to make your, shout outs, because I don't want to, I think I'll end on one of these so we can go out with one of these. And so I'm going to ask Michael first to share his shout out. And again, anything you say, Michael, I will also put on my website, www.kimberlyirwin.me, M-E. Okay, shoot, Michael.
Okay, excellent. Thank you. Well, the way to get involved in the Voices of Black Women's Study is to go to voices@cancer.org. Voices.cancer.org is the website, voices.cancer.org. And again, I'm just very excited about it, not only because it's collecting regular behavioral information, but it actually is looking at levels of social support and exposure to discrimination and racism. So it's getting at, topics and factors that haven't really been captured before. And so I want people to just know that it's really important to be a part of it, to, raise the voices of Black women. And so again, it's voices.cancer.org to sign up.
Thank you. But, yeah. So we're getting all the technology down pat. So we found that we are able to access the video. So let's do this. If you don't mind, we're going to play the video that showcases about a minute or so of one of the voices that you can hear if you go to the library's oral history collection. And this is about Mary Ice Blocks, and it's entitled Walking River. And I heard just a little bit, and I would like for us on the flip side of this to, you know, share what our thoughts are when we hear this. So listen in closely.
Yes, this man across here, this neighbor across the street, he's probably going now. He goes out, takes his, he's got a thing that you swirl around in the ice, you know, and he goes down and gets these and catches them. He goes every day, fishes through the ice, neighbor across the street here. But they used to do it an awful lot. Then it used to be ice. They used to get ice off the river. That's how they filled ice houses.
Really?
You didn't have the ice boxes. Sure, they used to go right down here and cut the ice on the river.
Wow.
They did. They really did. Yes.
That's how everybody kept their...
Yes. When we first moved up here, the first year, we walked across the Hudson River. Five of us. Because we wanted to show
the people...
across the Hudson River. We did. And I got pictures of it. And then I sent them back down to Maryland so they could see it. It was 32 below. 32 below zero. And
what are you doing walking across the river?
To show the people that we could walk across the Hudson River. Because we didn't have the bridge then, see? Mm-hmm. And in order to get to Catskill, you had to go...
Across the river?
Go to Albany, then come down.
Oh, really?
To get to Catskill.
Wow.
Yes. Mm. Yes, that's the truth. It was 1932 we walked across the Hudson River. Yeah, my husband and my three brothers and I. My two brothers and I. Yes, sir. I took pictures of it. Yes, sir.
Wow. I mean, I just keep going.
Oh, yes.
I just keep thinking, wow, wow, wow. So a couple of things that I didn't know. I didn't know that the Hudson River froze over so that one could walk over it. I had no idea about that. What about you, Garrett? Did you know that people could walk across the Hudson River?
I have heard that, actually.
Wow. Have you seen that?
I've not seen it, but I heard about it years ago.
Oh, wait a minute. Global warming. What were you going to say, Kathleen?
Well, that's actually one of the stories of the lightkeepers who lived in the lighthouse. The children used to walk to school on ice during the winter, and the father would chew and throw tobacco spits to create a trail for the children to follow all the way to school.
I'm just, my jaw's just dropped open. I've lived in Hudson. Well, I don't swim, so maybe I don't get too close to the water. But I never saw that. That's very interesting. Let me just finish what Brenda shared with me after we showed that. She wanted to make sure people knew that, you know, the library is available for you to, you know, come in and to look at these oral histories, because they give us a glimpse into life in the county at the turn of the last century. They also show the lives, dignity, struggles, and success of Black people in our area. This clip from Marie Parker's interview is one in which she speaks about the Hudson River in the winter, and it's available to be seen throughout the entirety of June. So you have a whole month to, you know, get more culture. You know, again, talk to your family members, because we have now technology that's free. Many young people have phones. You literally can just put your phone up to one of your grandparents and just say, talk. You know, you could all be an interviewer, right? And just get the history, the wealth of knowledge within your family is just amazing. So, Kathleen, you're shaking your head up and down. Let me ask you, is there anything that you would have wanted to ask a parent or grandparent that could have helped in, you know, understanding more about who you are?
Well, I would ask more about, you know, how I'm more interested with the healing part. So like how they healed themselves back in, you know, all the words of wisdom that they used to have. I think those are the invaluable things that we can learn from them.
I think health and wellness, right? Because they didn't need the technology. They had the actual food at their disposals, which, you know, didn't have pesticides and other things on them. I don't know. When I went to Europe, I was like, the food tastes really good here. I didn't know why. And they were like, well, there's no pesticides. What about in the Philippines? What was food, or how does food taste, or is it differently tasting there than here?
Oh, in the Philippines, it's very Spanish. It's influenced by Spanish. So most of our foods there have that Spanish flavor. Unfortunately, you know, we don't have a lot of ice. Everything mostly is organic, essentially, but we also don't have a lot of things that we have here, like cheese, for example. Asia doesn't know anything. If you talk to an Asian and you ask them if they love cheese, it's like, no, we don't love cheese, except for pizza.
Oh, wait a minute.
Cheese in Asia.
I thought the Spaniards like cheese. I mean, they're in Europe. Europe? No?
Yeah, but I guess there's no... It's just too hot to make cheese.
Oh, yeah. Curl. Okay.
In a tropical country.
Well, I see Michael laughing. We're learning stuff, right, Michael? This is a great learning opportunity. Hey, you know what? Today is May 21st. And I just want, we're talking about old people, but I want to give a shout out to one of our newest members of Earth. Her name is Amina Tillman. And Amina has two parents, Nyla and Carlson Tillman Jr., who are, you know, giddy that it's her first birthday today. So I want to give a shout out to not just the old, because, you know, we're not who we are unless we have young people following, hopefully not always in our footsteps, but to seek out and find a better journey for themselves than what we even had. That's always the goal, right? To have that our young have a better existence. And it's not so clear it's possible, but it's definitely probable that the existence will be different because they have different tools. So each generation should utilize the tools that they have to, you know, make a commitment to one another to grow and to understand more about who they are and the world around them. That's why I think we're put on this planet, but who knows? I just want to also make a shout out to a lot of the Tillmans, because many of them were on my show. Letitia Tillman was on my show. Carlson Tillman was on my show. So thank you to the Tillman clan. Woohoo! And I'm going to give you the last word, Kathleen. What is one of the things that you can't wait to attend during the 150th celebration, so we can all make sure we're there?
So we have this calendar of events for the year. So as I said, we're kicking off with the boat parade on June 1st. And then we also have Flag Day, where we'll have the Hudson Float participating. We have the Athens Community Day in June, on June 8th. Hudson Festival Orchestra July 13th. And so on and so forth. I mean, there's a lot until it'll culminate in November for the lighting ceremony of the lighthouse. So come go to helps.org. You'll go to events page, and you'll see all the events lined up there, including our regular lighthouse tours.
Well, I will definitely go there. And actually, you did promise me a lighthouse tour. So I don't know. I should get there before Miss New York. I'm Miss Columbia County.
I'm going to text you. I'll tell you the schedule. I actually was thinking of doing that because this weekend, this Saturday, actually, it's the first day of our lighthouse tour.
Okay, I'll be there. All right. I'm going to be there on Saturday. And right now, I am going to the email to sign up for the cancer research right now for African-American women. Right, Michael? I'm doing that right now. I would like to say to everyone who's listening, love, beauty, joy. And, of course, for my guests, Kathleen Tan, woo-hoo-hoo, and Michael Sesserman. Am I saying that right? Okay, he's smiling. So, thumbs up. And of course, to my great assistant here, production assistant, Garrett Roche. Garrett, give a shout out.
The pleasure is all mine. Thanks a trillion, Kimberly.
Okay, so I think we are. Well, are we done? Okay. Oh, okay, so we're not done. Okay, well then,
few seconds.
Well, then let's have the video that I was telling you about, the president.